through the first attackers. The barbarian of the north cared little whether his axes found horse or man. Selim was far more surgical in his attack, but no less fierce. The southerner whipped his curved cutlass with clean lines, every swipe removing heads or blocking swords. Asher lost sight of them then, as the center of the charge caught up, meeting him and the elves in the middle. There were very few horses now, as it had become too dangerous for the riders to charge through, blind as they were through the flames. "Asher!" Nathaniel screamed, but he too was lost in the rush of dark cloaks, many of which had caught fire. The ranger wanted to turn back and fight alongside the greycoat, but he was closer to the elves now, and surrounded by enemies and smoke. There was nothing elegant about the fight that followed, with Carathan soldiers rushing towards the gate with abandon, swinging their swords at anything not wearing a dark cloak. In the beginning, there was no room to even lift a sword, as everyone bashed into each other in a vicious shoving match. Many were brought down before the fighting, in the crushing impact. Asher pushed and kicked until he carved out some space, where he could heft his broadsword in savage arcs, giving them pause and himself some time. In all the chaos, he had forgotten to blind his eyes with the red cloth, leaving him to his very ordinary senses. The blade of his sword caught attack after attack, and always followed up with a cleaving swipe or a hammering from his spiked pommel. Asher fell into the rhythm of the oldest dance known to man, using his elbows, knees, and fists to keep his opponents at bay. "Everything is a weapon," Nasta used to say. Ignoring the aches and pains in his knees and back, the ranger fought his way through the oncoming soldiers until he glimpsed the blonde hair of an elf. "Reyna!" Asher could see the dark cloak that had circled around to attack her from behind, but his call could not be heard over the din. Two quick slices had the men in front of him reduced to coughing blood and collapsing at his feet. One more swing relieved them of their heads, helmets and all. The ranger ran through the drifting smoke and barreled into the sneaking foe before he could strike Reyna down. With one hand on the hilt of his broadsword and the other on the blade itself, Asher shoved his sword horizontally into the man's chestplate and pushed him back into another dark cloak. The ranger wasted no time dispatching the soldier with a pommel to the jaw and backswing to cut open the man behind him. Now he was back to back with Reyna. "Where's Phelan?" Asher asked as the next pair came in. "I don't know." Reyna ducked and pivoted on her knee with her scimitar held out to the side. One dark cloak was brought to the ground without his legs, and the other split open at the waist. Asher kicked and swung, and never stopped until his opponent was still. There was no end to the horde of soldiers marching on them. The ranger could only hope that Kale's forces were burrowing their way through from the back. A black and gold blur of motion flashed from left to right, and half a dozen dark cloaks dropped to the ground, with missing limbs and cries of agony on their lips. The blur came back from another angle, and Asher finally caught a glimpse of Doran Heavybelly racing through astride his armored hog. His thick sword couldn't be denied, as it easily cut through Carathan armor and bone. The ranger was fairly certain he could hear the dwarf laughing. A group of three dark cloaks targeted Asher and tried to surround him, splitting up from Reyna. The ranger parried the first two blades and kicked the third man away, using the space to retrieve his silver short sword from his back. The rune blade was in hand at just the right moment, as the broadsword impaled the first attacker and became lodged between the man's ribs and chestplate. Asher spun the short sword in a quick circle and deflected the second blade before releasing the broadsword and using his free hand to deliver an open palm strike into the third man's throat. Spinning around to tackle the second dark cloak, Asher was relieved to see Reyna's scimitar buried in his chest. The ranger gave a nod of appreciation and turned around to spear his silver blade into the choking man's face. The display warded off the next group, giving Asher a moment to pull his broadsword free of the dead dark cloak. He took a deep breath and felt pain stab at his ribs. There was no blood, but the pain was very real. When had he taken the hit? This is why he despised fights such as these. The sound of magic could not be misheard. Asher headbutted another dark cloak and blinked the blood out of his eyes to see Hadavad making short work of his enemies. The old mage contorted his staff into every unorthodox position and fired off spell after spell. Any who survived the destructive magic was met with a wooden bat to the head. Watching a Tharia fight was more akin to observing a dance, as the younger woman leapt from one attacker to the next, using her powerful legs to push the soldiers away before following up with her staff and a spell. The mage never stopped. "Phelan!" Asha called over the fire and screams and horses. It was madness. There was no keeping track of time anymore, but the sun had descended beneath the horizon, and the fight continued under the stars. It took Asher a bit longer to realize he was only 20 feet away from Scylla's gate now. They had been pushed back. The elves were proving their worth and keeping the dark cloaks working, but there was still no sign of Kale and his riders. Every now and then, the ranger would catch a glimpse of Bale singing his way across the battlefield, waving his axes around, or Doran's hog taking legs out. The dwarf was missing now, too. "Asher!" Glade brought a dark cloak down with the tackle around the midriff and rolled out to stand at Asher's side. The two friends fought back to back until Rayna glided in with her scimitar. The three of them fell into a pattern that expanded and contracted to dispatch the waves that fell upon them. "Where's Nathaniel?" Rayna asked, her movements hard to keep track of. Asher wrestled a soldier off Glade's back and spun him around, where he thrust his broadsword until the crossguard connected with the dark cloak's armor. "Asher!" Rayna parried a stray blade, saving the life of an owl, before beheading the soldier in a single swipe. "Where's Nathaniel?" Asher looked around at the falling bodies. "I don't know." Nathaniel had completely lost his bearings in the mayhem. When the opportunity became available, he could see that Scylla's gate was much further away than where he had started, though much of it was hidden behind a curtain of rising smoke. Some of Kael's riders could be spotted in the distance, cutting their way through and fighting those still atop their mounts. Many had been thrown from their horses, or simply abandoned them after injury. There were two or three owls by his side, but the majority of those he would call allies were now cloakless Carathans. "Watch out!" Torrin shoved Nathaniel to the ground as a riderless horse charged towards them. The leader of the owls had been a sight to behold amid the chaos of battle. The young warrior was just as skilled with his curved blades as Asher had been with his own. Nathaniel found his feet just as two dark cloaks came in with their swords aimed at his chest. The greycoat could never be called a novice with a sword, and he easily batted the attacks away and followed up with an elven maneuver he had picked up from watching Rayna. The two men were dead before they hit the ground. Torrin was there 1 second and gone the next, as an exotic flip in the air had an assassin's foot colliding with a white owl's jaw. The Arrakesh took no prisoners and killed three of Kael's soldiers with her twin blades. The three men were dead before Torrin retrieved his swords and stood up. It was the first woman Nathaniel had seen in the battle, and as out of place as she appeared, the assassin proved that the art of delivering death cared little for gender. Her time in Nightfall had left only a killer behind. Both Nathaniel and Torrin advanced as one, but the Arrakesh jumped into the air and hit them simultaneously with a split kick. They once again found themselves on the dusty ground that had now become wet with blood and piss. Looking up from his back, the knight could only watch as the assassin cut down an owl and two more Carathan soldiers. Torrin recovered faster than Nathaniel, and launched himself at the woman, where the two became locked in combat. They occasionally broke from each other to strike down another foe before coming back together. Not to be left out, the greycoat carved his way through four soldiers until the Arrakesh was before him. A swift punch had Torrin on the back foot, opening the melee for Nathaniel to wade in. The sound of constant battle distracted the knight from the thundering hooves, bringing the sound and image into one bloody vision, as Phelan galloped past astride a white mare with her scimitar swinging. The assassin's head was cleaved from her body. The fighting had become too clustered, preventing the elf from riding much further. Demonstrating her kind's grace and uncanny agility, Phelan backflipped off the horse and came down fighting. Before she had come out of her crouch, two dark cloaks had already lost everything below the knees. Phelan fell in beside her without a word, and the two went to work, fashioning out their territory on the battlefield. Torrin rallied what owls he could, and the group grew in size until they were a force to be reckoned with. "Salim!" The distant voice of Doran Heavybelly rang clear over the clashing swords. The group of fighters, led by Phelan Scimitar, turned and fought their way towards the dwarf. The smaller warrior could not be seen, but enemies falling around him were easy to find. The armored ranger was climbing up a piling mound of bodies when they came across him, scrambling to kill his next opponent with a sword in one hand and a spiked gauntlet covering the other. "Salim, you fool!" Doran cried, barreling through the mess of soldiers. "Doran!" Nathaniel called, rallying the dwarf. "It's Salim," Doran explained, dragging the dark cloak to the ground and burying his sword under his exposed chin. "The fool's going for the Arrakesh." Nathaniel used the pile of bodies to briefly elevate himself above the din. 30 feet away, the old honor guard was striding towards a tight group of blindfolded assassins. The Arrakesh had stayed near the back of the army, avoiding much of the chaos. Nathaniel wasn't looking forward to this fight, and he quickly scanned the carnage for any sign of Asher. Salim was set upon within seconds by the Arrakesh. Torin broke from the group and ran to his side, his own blades dripping with blood. Nathaniel wasn't nearly agile enough to slip between the melee as Torin had, forcing him to fight his way through. Together, Phelan and Nathaniel covered each other's blind spots, though for every one that the greycoat struck down, the elf took two with her fine scimitar. "Father!" Torin screamed, using the crumpled body of an allied Carathan to jump high into the air. With both blades held high, the white owl fell into the fray with a fury Nathaniel had never seen. This young man was simply angry, and in possession of a set of skills that combined to make him a deadly opponent. The knight could see his flaws, however. Nathaniel had no choice but to dash ahead of Phelan and intervene before an assassin's short sword removed Torren's head. The greycoat took a slash across the waist for his assistance and a kick to the stomach. With all thought of honor fleeting, Nathaniel plunged his one-handed blade into the Arrakesh's foot on his way down. From his crouched position, the knight removed the dagger from his belt and thrust upwards into the assassin's neck. "You need to be quicker!" Phelan was by his side and batting away two more short swords before they could find Nathaniel's flesh. Torin and Salim were working together in perfect harmony, their blades moving in every direction to keep the Arrakesh at bay. Their anger would get them killed. Nathaniel knew of the level head required to engage an assassin of Nightfall in combat. "Come on!" Doran ran through with his sword taking out legs and opening guts. Any who fell to the ground with a beating heart soon found his spiked gauntlet buried in their skulls. A great wave of heat burned against Nathaniel's cheek, and he shielded his eyes from the flow of fire erupting from Phelan's hand. The torrent lit three of the Arrakesh on fire, sending them running into the mass of bodies and creating havoc. With quick thinking, the greycoat ripped the pouch of tallow spices from his belt and threw them into the stream of fire. The resulting explosion was deafening and blinding, but only for an instant to his eyes. For the Arrakesh, it was hell. "Now!" Torin called, running his blades through the nearest assassin. Nathaniel wasted no time cutting them down while their senses were overloaded. A part of him hated killing anyone who couldn't defend themselves, but he could see the faces of so many greycoats that had been murdered by the dark foe. When the assassins were no longer a threat, Nathaniel couldn't help but drop to one knee and lean heavily on his sword. He was exhausted. Looking around, so many others, both friend and enemy, were doing the same, with some even playing dead. Only Phelan remained upright and able to fight the soldiers that came from the back. The greycoat could no longer tell what was blood and what was sweat on his face. Nathaniel grunted and pushed himself up, sidestepping a dark cloak swing and spinning about with his sword angled to remove his attacker's head. The resistance in the man's bones jarred against Nathaniel's wrist and forearm, threatening to release his grip on the hilt. The knight had never fought for so long and so hard before. The greycoats kept the peace. They had never fought in wars. Salim roared into the night, and Torin screamed in protest. Nathaniel turned about to see the old honor guard stumble to his knees with a hand across his stomach. Torin jumped between him and the three soldiers who surrounded Salim. It was probably a stupid thing to do on a battlefield as crowded as this, but Nathaniel threw his sword end over end into one of the three men, leaving Torin to dispatch the others. One successfully slashed the white owl's leg, and the other managed to backhand him across the face. They are all becoming too exhausted to fight now. Nathaniel wanted to help Salim, but in the moment he was numb, as if the ranger hadn't been mortally wounded. He knew he should feel something, anything, at the sight of Salim in peril, but making sense of his feelings in the bloody slaughter was impossible. He could only move forward. With no sword in hand, Nathaniel barreled into his next opponent and landed on top of him. The greycoat dropped his forearm into the man's throat and pressed down until the life left his eyes. When he looked up again, Phelan was launching one of Torin's attackers into the air with a telekinetic spell and cutting the throat of the other with her scimitar. Nathanael rolled off the dead body beneath him and prayed to the gods for the strength to stand up again. It was going to be a long night. Torrin stumbled to Salim's side and half fell to the ground. His adoptive father was bleeding to death, with a gash across his stomach and another across his chest. The son of Nun ignored the pain in his own leg and instinctively held a hand over Salim's gut, but the blood pumped out relentlessly. "Father!" Torrin couldn't bear to see the look on Salim's face, a look of resignation. "Get up!" Phelan called from behind, cutting down two more dark cloaks. Torrin ignored the elf and stared at his father. It was the cruelest twist of fate that they should just be brought back together and then ripped apart forever. "You need to fight, son." Salim gritted his teeth and squeezed Torrin's arm. "Now!" The alarm in Salim's eyes had Torrin raising his short sword to prevent his head from being removed. The white owl gave in to his rage for the briefest of moments and barreled the soldier to the ground. He stabbed him repeatedly long after he was dead. "You fight for naught, son of Nun," a voice cried over the din. Torrin slowly stood up, recognizing the voice, and looked beyond Salim's prone body. Argo was braced defiantly between a group of Carathan soldiers, his short swords in hand. The assassin's blindfold covered his eyes, and he had now swapped his watch uniform for his real Arrakesh armor. "Fighting for the dead will only see you join them." Argo glanced at Salim, who was close to death now. "I will kill you for your part in all this." Torrin's statement was flat, despite his resolve. Before he could launch himself at the assassin, a pair of horses galloped through and made a bloody mess of things, their riders swinging mercilessly. Kale, the commander of the allied Carathans, leapt from his horse and brought Argo's entourage down in a heap of limbs. Torrin wasted no time in closing the gap, bringing Argo within arm's length. The new limp in his leg was affecting the speed of his attack, making him clumsy and predictable. "You'll have to do better than that." Argo spun away and brought the flat of his blade across the back of Torrin's head. The son of Nun fell into the fray and took a kick to the face as one of his own owls stumbled past. Kale was already on his feet and back to fighting his own kinsmen, too far away to help now. Torrin crawled over the bodies and threw the blood, desperate to get back to Salim's side. There was no hiding from Argo, however. The assassin's heightened senses would find him anywhere. As Salim came back into sight, two strong hands gripped his head, one under his chin and the other around his temple. Argo was standing over him with a wicked grin on his face. The assassin pulled the son of Nun to his knees and held him in a vice. "You were so easily tricked," he hissed into his ear. "You led so many to the slaughter, white owl." Torrin's head was fixed with his gaze over Salim, who continued to cling to life. The son of Nun recognized the grip he was in, having employed it before, and knew he was moments from having his neck snapped. But seeing his father bleed to death, seeing Halion tortured and hung, seeing Brago take his last breath, and now his owls were dying around him, he could only see red. With both hands, Torrin threw his arms up and sunk his thumbnails into Argo's eyes, pushing through the blindfold. With his elbows, the son of Nun squeezed Argo's hands, preventing him from executing the neck snap. The assassin screamed, and Torrin smiled. That was all he wanted to hear. With the strength he had left, Torrin flipped Argo over his head, bringing the assassin down on his back, hard. The fine blade strapped across Torrin's chest slipped from its scabbard with ease, but it sunk into Argo's throat even easier. The Arrakesh spat blood, which quickly became a gargle before his body spasmed and went limp. Torrin roared into the night. Killing Argo did nothing for the rage trapped inside of him, a rage that would see him find his feet and keep fighting, until the empty embrace of death claimed him. The son of Nun knew he would never stop. Chapter 32. The First War. Gideon strode into the clearing, where Mornblade rested in the stone. He swiveled on Ilargo, who had followed him in, his mind racing with questions. The stars were out now, and the moon cast the tranquil setting in a pale glow that sparkled over the dragon's scales. "What do you mean Adriel has lied to me?" Gideon had made for the clearing at Ilargo's behest before they continued their discussion. Ilago looked down at the mage, and his narrow pupils expanded. Ginnin could feel the dragon inside his mind, inviting him into their sanctuary. Giving himself over to the magical pull, the Dragorn, as he now was, opened his eyes under a different canopy of stars. The endless fields of green were somehow calming in their infinite depth. Unlike before, there were tall, lush trees dotted about the fields, giving the mage some idea of the distances he was looking at. Small flowers of every colour had sprouted from the ground, and the grass had grown taller in his absence. Sensing his confusion, Ilago said, "The sanctuary grows as our bond does." Ginnin closed his eyes and shook his head. "You said I'm not the first human Dragorn." "You are not. There were many before our bond, before either of us were born." "Are you not supposed to tell me this?" Ginnin could feel everything Ilago was feeling. The dragon felt guilty for both keeping the secret and telling it. "You are Dragorn. This secret is yours to guard now. Tell me, Ilago, what is it?" "I will show you." The sanctuary was ripped from under him, and the familiar feeling of falling through clouds had his gut twisting in knots. As the mage broke through the last bank of clouds, the battle that had plagued his mind was raging below, with dragons weaving and diving between giant spears and hordes of soldiers swarming over the land. Ilago appeared from nowhere and glided beneath his falling form until the two came together, with Ginnin astride his armored back. Ilago tucked in his wings and dropped towards the ground, bringing the memory into focus. The green dragon drifted in the air for a while, allowing Ginnin the time to take it all in. They appeared to be in no danger, with neither the dragons nor the men taking any notice of them. They were just visitors in this place. A great city was spread out before them, built partially into the rock amid towering spires decorated with chrysalith. "What is this?" "The First War. The war that changed everything." "When is this?" Ginnin still couldn't believe how real it all felt. "The true history of Verda is not one even the elves can recount. This battle took place thousands of years ago, not long after the creation of the elf." "After the creation of the—" Ginnin could feel the world he knew tipping upside down. "Mankind created the elves in their image. They were the first attempt at trying to become immortal. But the king failed, and in the process created another species you now know as the elf." "We created elves?" Ginnin said the words out loud, but he couldn't understand them. "Mankind came first. The king, Atalan, was perhaps the strongest." "Atalan?" the mage echoed. "The king of the gods." "He wasn't always a god. In the beginning, he was a man." Ilago banked to the left and flew straight for the fortress in the heart of the city. With a mighty thud, the green dragon landed atop the tallest tower and dipped his neck, allowing Ginnin to clamber off. Standing by the edge was a man draped in billowing scarlet robes and a belt laden with scrolls and mage's tools. The dragon walked around the man, who was oblivious to the observation, and took him in. The man had long white hair and a beard to match, and he shouted into the sky, every word eliciting another lightning strike that found a dragon. The staff in his hand was that of wood, but the end was adorned with an amber sphere wrapped within a coil of steel. The shaft was clearly decorated with shards of green chrysalith from top to bottom. "This—" Ginnin looked from Ilago to the man. "This is Atalan? This is who everyone in the Six Kingdoms worships above all others? He's just a man." "He was the king of the first men, and a powerful mage, perhaps the most powerful. The seed was sown by his father, Agandalan, while Atalan was but a child. Agandalan became obsessed with the idea of immortality, an obsession he passed on to his son." "How did he create the elves?" Ginnin asked. "With magic, and the assistance of his trusted council. But he intended to make mankind immortal, not create an immortal race. Atalan saw the elves as a failure, and cast them out of his kingdom, jealous as he was." "How did he get from creating elves to this?" Ginnin looked out over the battle between man and dragon. "Dragons are at the heart of Atalan's obsession with immortality. We were the first of the long-lived that mankind met. Before us they had no concept of life without death. So he tried to enslave your kind. The mage looked at Atalan in disgust. He wanted our scales. He believed they held the key to lasting life. Atalan had his right hand, Nias, perform experiments on those he captured. Our scales were used in various spells, but none had the desired effect. Gideon shook his head. It's barbaric. How could he believe that would work? Ilargo looked from Gideon to the other dragons in the sky. Because of the dragorn. The mage followed Ilargo's gaze and tracked a golden dragon soaring between the lightning strikes. The dragon had a rider on its back. Gideon rapidly searched the skies and found other dragons with riders nestled between their wings. Before the elves, dragons chose humans to be their companions. Our bond was significantly stronger and easier to form than it is with an elf. We were natural companions. They fought against Atalan with you? Yes. They rebelled against their own kind when the war started. None survived to the end, however. How did they anger Atalan? Gideon waved his hand out and watched it pass through Atalan's robes as if they weren't there. Because they are immortal, Gideon. Gideon wanted to frown, but his whole face froze in a blank expression. He wasn't stupid enough not to understand what Ilargo had just said. He just wasn't sure what to do with the information. All dragorn, human or elf, are immortal. Immortal? How can I be immortal? I'm human. Gideon had walked away from Atalan now and come to stand before the green dragon. The magic we naturally expel will be absorbed by you over our time together. You will not appear as you do now forever, but eventually you will cease to age. This can only be achieved with those bonded to us, hence Atalan's jealousy. He was not chosen to be dragorn. So, Gideon was finding it all very hard to piece together. You're saying I'm immortal? I'm never going to die? Not if I have anything to say about it. You can still be killed, as any elf can, but time can no longer touch you. Ilargo bent down, and Gideon massaged the scales between his eyes. You are the first immortal man since the end of the First War. Gideon turned away and walked across the top of the tower. The wind blew his dark curls, and he had to remind himself that none of this was real. He was desperate to wrap his head around the idea of immortality, but it was beyond him. It was impossible to understand something he couldn't touch or see or even measure for years to come. Is all of this the secret the dragorn have been keeping? That man came first? That the gods were just people? If only it were so simple. Gideon could hear Reynold's wisdom and age in Ilargo's words. It was easy to forget that the green dragon was younger than him, with so much experience available to draw upon from his mother's life. The war came to an end some years after this battle. My mother and Garganifan rallied the dragons and drove what remained of mankind into the wild moors, where they were forced to live without their castles or magic. Over the millennia, they became as wild as the forest that shielded them from us. Meliath wanted to burn it all down, but Garganifan stopped him, preserving your kind. If he had not stopped Meliath, we would not be bonded, and so I am thankful. Gideon's jaw dropped. The Outlanders! The Outlanders are the descendants of the first men! As are you. When your kind first emerged from the moors after so many millennia, there were no elves still living who remembered you. But how did they become gods? Even the elves worshipped them before men did. Even the elves were wild in the beginning. What facts they had about Atalan and the others eventually fell into myth and legend. These legends became stories that were taken on as something more, something to be worshipped. Ilargo lifted his head, assuming a regal pose. I have shown you all that my kind has seen. The secret kept by all dragorn is more of a purpose than a piece of knowledge, but it should only be passed on by another dragorn. Gideon could feel the shift in reality coming this time. As Ilargo broke away and the sanctuary became a distant place in his mind, the young mage took a lasting look at the king of the gods, chanting into the sky. The experience was less jarring, and Gideon opened his eyes to see Adriel entering the clearing beside Mournblade. I have been in council with Reynel, Adriel announced softly. You have not been a dragorn for nearly long enough to learn of the truth, but these are different times, and there are only two of us now. The elf glanced at Ilargo, and Gideon felt a brief conversation pass between them. Ilargo has shared the history of our two people. I know it is a lot to take in. I remember Galandavax imparting those memories to me so long ago. I assure you, learning that your entire race was made out of one man's greed and lust for power was a lot to take in for me as well. Gideon needed the missing piece. What is the real purpose of the Dragorn, Adriel? Adriel walked around Mournblade. In the beginning, when your people were dragon riders, there was no purpose beyond companionship. It was thousands of years later, when my people ruled over Ilion, that the Dragorn came into being. The dragons chose their companions from my people, and over time, they shared the true history of the world with us. As shocking as the truth was, we all agreed on our singular purpose. We must protect the Vale. The Vale? Gideon had never heard of it. When Atalan failed to replicate the immortality he created with elves, and the war with the dragons was tipping against him, he turned to other options. First he created Chrysalith, to bring down the dragons and cancel out magic. Only Atalan knew how to use magic in its presence, a secret he guarded jealously. Still, the dragons continued to beat his forces, so he had Nias, the god of magic, make him something special. Atalan sent Nias to Caliban, his personal sanctuary in the mountains, and had him create the Vale. No one knows exactly how long it took Nias, but his work came to fruition as the First War came to an end. Most of humanity had been driven into the wild moors by then, but Atalan retreated to Caliban. Adriel casually gripped the hilt of Mournblade, but Gideon couldn't tell if the elf was pulling or not. What did this Vale do? It granted them immortality. Adriel released his grip and turned back to Gideon. The Vale opens a gateway to another world, one above this realm. It's hard to say what existence is like there, but they have some level of omniscience that allows them to watch this world. Their ability to affect this world is limited, however. Paldora's star is said to have been sent by the goddess, but there is no proof of that. If they had any real power in this realm, it would all be dead by now. So Atalan, Nias, Paldora, all the gods are just above us? In some other realm? Yes. And they cannot return. The Vale remained on this side of the gateway, stranding them. There were instances in the past where their influence was evident, but none more so than Valinus. He is proof that they have some reach in Verda. So the Dragorn are supposed to protect the Vale? Gideon frowned. Shouldn't you just have destroyed it? We tried for years, but it was resistant to all our efforts, even dragon's breath. The Vale can only be undone by the magic that created it. The Pools of Nias, Gideon said. The very place. The Dragorn searched for Caliban, but the highest peaks of the Slumbering Mountains are not an easy place to explore. Eventually, Adriel glanced at Mournblade, Elandril's fabled sword, it was decided that we would instead keep it safe so that no one could ever bring them back. Gideon was putting everything together. Adelandra told me that Valinus found the pools. That's how he became so powerful. Yes, he succeeded where so many of us had failed. The pools of Nias created a bridge between him and the others, their influence undeniable. He started the Dark War for them. I thought he wanted the gem, Paldora's. The gem was needed to help control the magic of Nias, but his true goal is to locate the Vale and open the gateway. If Atalan and the others were allowed to return, they would wreak chaos across all of Verda. They wouldn't stop until all bowed to them, and the dragons were in chains, the secret to immortality theirs. So where is it? Gideon asked, looking from Adriel to Ilargo. Where's the Vale? Adriel took a long breath. In a safe place. Chapter 33 Savages. Aladir stepped through the portal with Nakir, and instantly felt the magic resonating from Scylla's gate. It was foreboding not just in its incredible size, but that of the ceiling wards that covered the surface. The elf wanted to reach out and touch it, but the sound of the Darkerkin could not be ignored. Their war horns and drums echoed inside the canyon, accompanying the thunderous march and guttural chanting. "You have spoken with these savages?" Nakir didn't appear impressed. "I have been courting them for years, Mind your tongue, Nakir. They are easily offended. You mean they're always looking for a fight? Aladir recognized the albino overlord Ket, with half a head of white blonde hair and a muscled body layered in red tattoos. The overlord rode up astride a giant lizard, common in Ada's southern lands.
This way, shut!
Ket shouted over the roar of his army. We have traveled a hard road for this fight, Ancient One. We want to fight. Aladir couldn't find the words at the sight of four cave trolls being dragged alongside the army, laden with thick chains. The lumbering beasts towered over the army and protested with every step, but the Darkerkin continued to probe them with spears, pushing them on.
Where did you find them?
Aladir asked in a harsh tone. Overlord Ket glanced back at the black trolls and sneered.
They are mine now.
But where did you get them? Aladir tried to keep the concern out of his voice, but he already knew what Ket was going to say.
These mountains are filled with such beasts.
The overlord held up his hand, and the entire army of savages came to a stop.
They serve me now.
The Undying Mountains? Nakir looked beyond Ket to the canyon walls.
Aladir stepped closer to the giant lizard.
Do not disturb these mountains. There are things that live deep in the rock that should remain there.
Ket puffed out his chiseled torso. The Darker can fear nothing.
You've never seen an orc? Nakir commented casually.
A what?
Aladir raised his hand to halt the conversation. Prepare your forces to storm the gates. We will open it.
Be quick, elf.
Ket turned his reptilian mount around. My men haven't killed anything for many days. Aladir watched the overlord ride away and turned to Nakir, who was giving him a knowing look from behind his half-mask and hood. What they lack between their ears, they make up for in numbers.
Their numbers will be for naught if we cannot open Scylla's gate.
Aladir took a lasting look at the 10,000 strong amassing in the canyon and strode towards the gate. The old iron felt alive under his touch, as if the metal was moving. The elves split up, taking a door each, and planted both hands against the symbols and glyphs. Aladir prayed to Nias and poured his magical will into the gate, drawing on every crystal in his possession. His white robes glowed with all the crystals tucked away, as did Nakir's dark armor and cloak. The brothers pushed their will into the gate and felt its expanse absorbing their efforts, spreading their energy too thin. Nakir began to growl and roar at the gate as he forced every bit of his magic into it. Aladir could feel the sweat collecting on his brow and his hair sticking to his temples. There was no counterspell or enchantments designed to halt their efforts, just an enormous amount of magic. An image flashed before Aladir's eyes, burning his mind with the terrifying visage of Garganathan, the ancient king of the dragons. Before his demise in the final battle of Elethia, at the end of the Dark War, the great dragon must have assisted Lady Scylla and the elders in sealing the gate. This was a detail Aladir had not been privy to. Aladir ceased his barrage and stepped back, taking in the enormous gate. Nakir did the same and approached his brother with a heaving chest. They were both feeling drained.
Dawn is upon us.
Nakir looked up to the top of the eastern canyon and observed the faint light creeping over the stars, fading their beauty.
This gate has been sealed by more than just elves, Aladir replied. Dragon magic has been used.
I felt it too. Garganathan's breath stains the iron.
Nakir stepped back and uncoiled his famous whip.
Somewhere between anger and curiosity, the elf lashed out at the gate and struck it with the three sharpened prongs.
Aladir had seen the whip crack steel and split iron in half.
Scylla's gate didn't have so much as a scratch. Nakir examined his whip as if it were broken, before looking to his brother for counsel.
Valinus is expecting us to open these gates.
No, brother. Our master is expecting us to provide passage for the Darkerkin. Nakir looked back at the savages before facing Aladir again.
You cannot mean what I think you do. We are perhaps the most powerful elves in the world, but even we cannot open and maintain a portal big enough and long enough to fit 10,000 Darkerkin through.
And yet we will, because Valinus demands it. The gods demand it.
Aladir raised his hand to get the attention of Overlord Ket.
The portals will drain us, Nakir protested in hushed tones.
Aladir blinked slowly. Just stay alive,
and they will remain open. Staying alive in a battle won't be easy with my energy being sapped, brother. And what of the princess and her companion? Both of them have the power to close portals, or at least make things harder. Aladir knew his brother had a point there. Valinus had always taught them to never underestimate their opponent. The ancient elf looked up at the gate and let his strategic mind go to work. "Open your portal up there, atop the gate," Aladir commanded. "The Darkerkin will flood the top and move down the scaffold. The portals will be safe up there." Aladir put his fingers into the pouch on his belt and felt the crystals therein. He had only two remaining, but that was all he would need. One to get up there and keep the portal open, and another to get off the gate again. Nakir appeared to consider his brother's plan. "Fine, but you will have to tell Ket that his trolls can't go." Chapter 34 Calamity. Rhaenyra parried two oncoming attacks and was thankful for her superior strength over men as she whipped her leg around and cracked both soldiers across the jaw, sending them flying into the fray. The elf reserved her magic for the moments where her scimitar wouldn't save her life, but was loath to use it in such crowded conditions. The same applied to her magnificent bow. The princess wanted to unleash the weapon and reduce the dark cloaks as quickly as possible, but the arrow would no doubt take the lives of plenty of owls, or even some of Kael's soldiers. Looking to her right, Rhaenyra could see that Glade and Asha were tiring, along with the owls, and many of the dark cloaks had even slowed down. If it weren't for their numbers, Rhaenyra was sure her elven stamina would have her kill them all. She refused to accept that the sharp pain in her sides and joints was exhaustion, however. The light of dawn was usually a comforting and inspiring view for Rhaenyra, but right now it just reminded her of how long they had been fighting. The fires were still burning, and the air had filled with smoke and the disgusting aroma of blood and other bodily fluids that her elven nose couldn't ignore. A dark cloak came for her from behind a staggering horse, surprising the elf. There was no time to fall into a defensive stance, however, as Bale of the Oakbreaker clan picked the attacker up and rammed him into the side of the horse, bringing all three of them down. The barbarian headbutted the soldier repeatedly until he became very still. Bale stood up, laughing and shouting to Crate, the god of war. Rhaenyra wanted to thank him, but the sight of his work took any words from her mouth. The constant fighting had distracted her from the thought of Nathaniel and Phelan, who were somewhere in the chaos of it all. She knew both were of a skill above the average fighter, but this kind of fighting was new to all of them. Even Asher had avoided battle on this scale, though the ranger appeared to be doing just fine. His green cloak was stained and heavy with the blood of others, but his broadsword never faltered. "Rhaenyra!" Asher was looking at her with concern marring his haggard features. The princess didn't realize until too late that the ranger was in fact looking past her, to the dark cloak. Her scimitar came up to spear the man, but Asher's silver short sword spun past her head and found its end in his face. That focused the elf. Rhaenyra ducked and swiveled as she weaved between various swords before performing an exotic maneuver that had her scimitar claim the lives of three dark cloaks and the hand of a fourth. Asher stumbled past her and retrieved his silver blade from the dead man's face, his blood running down the runes that lined the short sword. The ranger's injuries were apparent with only a cursory glance. For all his skill, avoiding this many attacks was simply impossible. "Asher!" Rhaenyra approached him with caution, seeing the wild look in his eye. The ranger's face was cut in several places, and his left eye appeared smaller than the right. His leather armor had taken a beating, with slashes on almost every panel. Some had been impaled and seeped blood. What was left of his green cloak was dirty and tattered and streaked with the blood of others. Following Asher's wild gaze, the princess found some wounds of her own, with a particularly nasty gash above her bracer, below the elbow. The more she thought about it, there were several parts of her body that ached and stung. The reprieve was short, with another cluster of dark cloaks fighting their way through a group of owls towards them. Glade was working his way towards them, but the ranger appeared in a worse condition to Asher. His long tanned coat was weighing him down now, and his dark skin was glistening with blood and fresh cuts. "Look!" The call came from somewhere in the fray, and was followed by more calls to look. Rhaenyra and Asher glanced to the sky, as much of the fighting came to a stop, and gaped at the spectacle in the cloudless blue above. A red streak, brighter than the sun, slowly flew over the desert. It was a sight none had ever seen during the day.
"Paldora's star," Rayna whispered, her expression vacant in awe and exhaustion.
Asher turned to her, his own expression somewhat grave and confused.
"What did the prophecy say about this?"
"Paldora's celestial gem graces daylight sky, and in its beauty ordains calamity."
Asher grunted. "I'd say it's about a day too late for that message."
Rayna was still looking up when her keen eye caught sight of something other than the streaking comet.
"Watch out!"
The elf tugged on Asher's arm and pulled him from the spot that would have become his grave. Dozens of spears fell from the sky, plunging into the desert's hard ground with enough force to keep them standing. Dark cloaks, owls and Carathan soldiers alike, fell under the brutal barrage. With the battle so closely pitched, every thud of a falling spear found a victim.
"Move away from the gate!" Rayna yelled.
The fighting on the desert floor had stopped in the mad rush to escape the spears and arrows that followed. Asher grabbed Rayna's arm and pulled her closer to Scylla's gate, where the spears and arrows were sparse.
"Glade!" Asher called the ranger to him. "Find the others and retreat to Carath."
"What's happening?"
Glade asked, wiping blood from his eyes.
Asher looked to Rayna, who examined the top of the gate, where her elven eyes could just make out the figures leaning over the edge.
"The Dark Akin are here," Asher said. "Find—"
The ranger stopped when the masses had cleared away from the gate and left the dozens of bodies in the dirt. Bale of the Oakbreaker clan was amid the strewn bodies, on his knees and soaked with blood, with at least 5 swords and 2 spears protruding from his thick torso. Both of his axes were buried in the limbs of other dead bodies, and his expression was one of glee. There was no time to mourn or even say a decent word for the barbarian, however.
"Find Phelan and Nathaniel," Asher continued. "Get everyone back to the city."
"Carath will not hold the Dark Akin at bay," Rayna offered.
Asher looked away for a second.
"Then take everyone north. The road to Ulborn is safe, and the Velian army will give the Dark Akin something to think about. You'll be safe there."
Rayna thought about King Rengar and wondered how accurate that assumption was.
"Where are you going?"
Asher looked up at the concaved gate.
"That's suicide," Rayna protested.
"There's nothing to be gained up there," Glade added.
"They haven't opened the gate," Asher pointed out. "That means Aladir and Nakir are using other methods to get them through."
Rayna knew from the way the ranger was looking at her that he was suggesting magical assistance.
"They've opened a portal."
"Well, either that or the Dark Akin brought some really big ladders."
Asher was busy ripping off a strip of his cloak and stuffing it into a gash in his armor, stemming the trickle of blood running down his back.
"At least they can't open the gate," Glade commented.
Asher looked out at the fleeing forces.
"It won't make any difference if there's nobody to push back."
Rayna tore her eyes from the comet and frowned at Asher.
"So what do you mean to do up there, besides getting yourself killed, that is?"
"Close the portal."
The ranger swung his broadsword round, but Rayna could see that he was really testing the strength in his arm.
"You mean to kill Aladir? And Nakir if I can."
Asher was already turning for the lift at the base of the scaffold.
"And how are you going to do that without the only weapon that can kill them?"
Rayna removed the black bow from her back. Asher patted the tip of Aladir's short sword at the base of his back.
"I've got one of my own."
Rayna dashed in front of the ranger. "You're going to need range if you're going to kill them all." Glade frowned and rubbed his head.
"You're talking as if he's actually going to get up there alive."
Indeed, the Darkakin's wild howls could be heard descending the scaffolding on both sides now. Asher met Rayna's green eyes.
"I'm not taking you with me."
The princess raised her eyebrow.
"No,
I'm taking you."
Rayna turned to Glade. "Find Nathaniel and Phelan and make sure they're safe." The princess didn't even want to consider if they were still alive. They simply had to be. Any other outcome would cripple her.
Asher had some lasting words for Glade.
"Torrin, son of Nun, will not lightly abandon the city. Make him see sense, Jonas."
The two patted each other on the shoulder.
"Just survive, old man."
Glade ran to the east and curved round the mountains to find his way back to the masses without running into spears. Elf and man hopped over the railing, though Rayna took note of Asher's pain as he did. After a whole night of fighting, there couldn't be much left in him. The cries of warring Darkakin narrowed her focus, reminding the princess that her survival was less than likely.
"Without anyone on the pulley, we will have to take the stairs."
Rainer could only imagine what energy either of them would have after such a climb.
I had a quicker path in mind.
The princess looked at the taut ropes that Asher was examining on the other side of the lift. You can't be serious. If you cut those, we'll go up so fast our heads will become buried in the ceiling. Rainer leaned out of the lift and looked up, where the counterweight sat atop the gate.
We'll survive.
Those weights are huge. They'll destroy the staircase. Asher replied with a hint of a smile.
They'll probably destroy the entire scaffold.
The scaffold is also the structure that keeps the lift in place. What if it's decimated before we reach the top?
Pray to your gods.
Arthur sheathed his broadsword and went to remove the dagger from his belt.
Just brace yourself against...
Rainer cursed herself for not hearing his approach, but the Arrakesh moved with a speed that left no time for regrets. Rodosan leapt over the railing and barreled into Asher, taking them both to the floor, while a second Arrakesh came up behind the elf. All four were quickly confined to the platform in a struggle to survive. Asher managed to roll over and put Ro beneath him, but the assassin still had both of his short swords in his hands. Rainer danced around her own Arrakesh, parrying his attacks with her scimitar and counterattacking by lashing out with the limbs of the bow. The curved ends were tipped with razor-sharp blades that defied the effects of time and never failed to pierce armor. The ranger was kicked off and sent flying into the railing, which cracked under his weight. Rainer could see the man was struggling to keep himself standing, and no doubt Rodosaren and the Arrakesh had kept out of the battle as much as possible.
You should have stayed in the wild.
Ro flipped onto his feet and lunged at Asher.
Hold on!
Rainer couldn't believe what she was doing, but fatigue had curbed her inhibitions. The elf spun around her attacker and lashed out with her scimitar, cutting the taut ropes that kept the counterweights in place. Asher and Ro collided at the same moment the platform jumped, bringing them both down in a tumble of limbs. Rainer's elven agility and sense of balance did nothing to help her. All four were plastered to the floor as the platform was hurtled up to the height of the gate. The sound of the counterweights flying past the lift was brief, and its descent quickly went wild until several tons of destruction were battering the wooden scaffold. Darkakin were flung from the upper tiers, while those first out of the portal were crushed by the counterweights or fractured beams. Rainer rolled to the side moments before the corner of the lift was torn away in a mess of splintered wood and broken body parts. The Arrakesh clawed at their feet, always searching for the kill angle. A solid kick to the face had the assassin thrown from the platform, where he was intercepted by debris and bent out of any shape that resembled a human. Asher and Ro were still struggling, but the lift was almost at the top now. Rainer wanted to move and help the ranger, but the momentum had her pinned to the other side.
Asher!
Rainer screamed. The ranger took punch after punch until eventually he rolled with a swing and forced Ro to lie on top of him. It was too late for anything else. The lift came to a stop, as sudden as its lift off. Only the end was far more violent. Rainer was launched into the air and saved only by her unrelenting grip on the railing. Asher and Ro, however, were flung into the wooden ceiling above and thrown back onto the platform. The princess held her breath, expecting the lift to now fall back to the desert floor and kill them all. The beams creaked and the wood snapped, but the lift remained in place. For now. Her elven senses detected the slightest of movement, informing her of the ever-increasing lurch. The platform was about to drop. Asher groaned and rolled Rodosan off him.
You should have stayed in the dark.
Asher!
Rainer hissed. The ranger let go of the assassin's throat and dived for the edge of the gate with the elf. Rainer felt the top of the lift brush against the soles of her feet as it plunged back to the base. Rose screams could only be heard for a second before the destruction and total collapse of the ancient scaffold became deafening. Rainer recovered first and pulled herself onto the walkway before assisting Asher in climbing up. The pain in her knee suggested she would have a limp, and the agonizing sting in her shoulder told of torn muscle. The ranger remained crouched, nursing his ribs, while the princess stood defiantly before the horde of Darkakin. The savages had filled out the walkway, shoulder to shoulder, and were growling and sneering at the pair, their crude spears and jagged swords baying for blood. Their bodies were covered in thick black tattoos and mixed with piercings and decorated with loose scraps of armor.
Asher?
Rainer kept her eyes on the Darkakin, and her scimitar held up.
I'm here.
Asher rose slowly to his feet and cracked his back and neck. The ranger's ability to shrug off pain was testament to his life in Nightfall. The Darkerkin quickly thinned out as the masses were redirected to the other side of the gate, now their only way down. As the numbers dropped away, Rayner was given a clear view of Aladir, standing in the middle of the gate with his white robes. Nakir was behind him, directing dozens of savages that poured out of two portals. Don't run off this time. Rayner knew they would only succeed if they worked together.
Don't worry, Asher croaked. I want him to see what's coming.
Between Scylla's Gate and Karrath, the stampeding armies that rushed to escape the Darkerkin were interrupted by a curious sight, unwitnessed by most mortals. A small patch of reality was ripped apart and replaced by an abyss that had no end. Balinus stepped through the portal and smiled from behind his mask. Darkerkin could be seen in the distance, clambering over one another to reach the desert floor, while more filled the walkway atop the gate.
Oh, what a mess of their world he had made, Balinus thought.
Smoke rose into the air, and fires burned, with horses running in every direction and a field of bodies that stretched across the desert. The kingdoms of man would crumble under their own weight, savages killing savages. Those of his own kin who survived the war would either bow to the gods or be wiped out by them. The Karathan stopped in front of him, cautious of the mysterious figure who had come from nowhere. The dark armor that fitted tight against his torso glistened under the morning sun, while his black robes hung lifeless in the still air. Most examined his mask, which concealed his golden glow, but gave them a terrifying reflection. Balinus looked up from under his hood and beheld the red comet. Haldora's star soared through the sky, much closer than it had ever come before. His fine eyes tracked the streaking star and observed the fragments that broke away and burned to ash.
Balinus!
His name was almost whispered, and the tone was that of a woman, but the elf couldn't find the source amidst the throng of soldiers and dirty faces staring at him. The Herald of the Gods didn't have time for these mortals, though he would have enjoyed wreaking havoc among them with his magic. The power of Atalan coursed through him, keeping the seizures at bay, for now, while he focused on the details. Looking up at Paldora's star, Balinus knew he was going to need that godly power if he was to do what was required. The dark elf made for Scylla's gate with confident strides. When the soldiers blocked his path with sheer numbers, Balinus swept his arms from side to side, every movement expelling a crushing wave of telekinetic magic. The soldiers and even the horses were pushed away with enough force to break bone and lift them off the ground. His stride never faltered, as his spells created a cascade effect to clear a path, kicking up sand and dirt with the body parts that had already been removed in battle.
Behind you!
The voice of Crate, the god of war, hissed in his ear. In typical human fashion, a man attacked Valinus from behind. His cowardice could be seen as bravery, and he was to be commended, since everyone else behind the elf had continued to flee for Karrath. But Valinus cared little for courageous humans. The herald spun about and caught the man's sword with his hand mid-swing. A barely perceptible field around his hand prevented any damage or pain. But as soon as the blade was in his grip, Valinus switched from defensive to offensive. The man pressed against him with both hands, desperately trying to regain control of his sword.
Nathaniel! A woman cried.
Valinus poured his magic into the blade until the steel turned orange and crackled under the immense heat. The waves rising from the blade distorted the man's determined features and the woman who approached him from behind. The ancient elf used his free hand to unleash a blast of energy into the man's chest, launching him into the woman and sending them both hurtling into the fleeing mob.
He is here!
Paldora whispered into his ear. The ranger, Atalan's powerful voice, had Valinus looking back at Scylla's gate. The elf continued to make his way south, the men now giving him a wide berth. It wasn't long before there was nothing but a field of dead bodies between him and the gate. Paldora's star flared above him. Now was the time. Valinus raised his arms to the comet and felt the presence of all 20 gods surround him, keeping him up as he called upon the power of Nias. Asher used one hand to push a Darkerkin over the edge, while swinging round to swipe another savage with his broadsword. As one toppled over the side of the gate, the other lost his head. These were the kind of numbers where an assassin excelled. Asher had the